Let the record reflect that we are here in the matter of, I'm going to ask for some help, Franceschi versus Pernia, case number 63655. We also have Justice Pickering in Las Vegas, and of course she sees and hears the arguments in exactly the same way that we do here, but in fact I did want to make you mindful of the fact that there is about a 1 second, a little bit more, but somewhat of a delay between here and Las Vegas, so if you are asked a question or are trying to respond to a question, just bear that in mind when you respond to Justice Pickering. And with that, are the parties ready to proceed? Very well.
Good afternoon. Emily McFarling for the appellant, Roberto Franceschi. The big issue in this case is that a paternity action was dismissed without the taking of evidence and without the making of findings of fact. And my contention that doing so is clear error by the district court and should absolutely be reversed. The administrative procedure for an acknowledgement of paternity is a great mechanism for a non-judicial establishment of paternity when the actual natural father is the one named in the acknowledgement of paternity. There should be great caution by the courts, the administrative bodies, for sanctioning parties placing the name of somebody who is not the natural father on an acknowledgement of paternity. That is an abuse of this process. It's such a wonderful streamlined process, but it is subject to abuse if there are not checks and balances to a natural father being able to come to court and get his rights established, contrary to an acknowledgement of paternity that does not name the correct natural father. When a woman has reason to believe that the named father is not the natural father, or even that there are potential other natural fathers out there than the one that's named, this is either fraud or it's a material mistake of fact. And the law allows for these acknowledgments of paternity to be set aside or rescinded based upon those bases and also duress. There's an administrative remedy to revoke one, but that has a very short time frame. It's very simple. And the only people who generally know that there was an acknowledgement of paternity done are the people who did it. So the revocation administrative mechanism is primarily for the named mother and father on that acknowledgement to correct a mistake in a very short period of time, and it's just an administrative remedy. The remedy for an actual natural father who was not named when there was somebody else named on there needs to be a real remedy that the courts actually give sufficient credence to. The NRS 126.53.3 provides an ability to challenge these acknowledgments of paternity. There isn't anything that clarifies how you go in and challenge it. I think the filing of a petition for paternity or any kind of paternity action that asks to be established as the father of a child is sufficient to ask to challenge an acknowledgement of paternity that was done through fraud, duress, or material mistake of fact.
And, of course, we all know, because the record clearly establishes that there was a DNA test performed here and that there was a 100% match. Is that correct?
I don't know if it was 100%, but it was absolutely within the realm.
Unequivocal.
Unequivocal, yes. Absolutely. The evidence that was presented or the arguments that were made in this case make it an even bigger error. In this case, we have a mother. She was not married to anybody else. We have a father who came to court promptly. This child was still a baby. He was clearly established through DNA test results. He had been in the child's life as well and had known that he was the father. There was some acknowledgement that he was the father generally prior to him coming to court. We have a whole myriad of facts that, if there had been an evidentiary proceeding, would have very likely led to the conclusion that he was a father. And the only reason that the judge appears to have given for dismissing this case is that she felt that she needed to have more direction from the court, that she felt like there wasn't.
On that point, and I follow what you've said so far, it's of concern to me that it looks like we just skipped 126-141 and her obligation to proceed under that. I mean, I appreciate that people would like a quick resolution from us of a legal question tendered to us, but the district court did not seem to track 126-141, which says she should have gone through the recommendation for settlement and so on and so forth. It just got abruptly dismissed out of hand, or am I misapprehending what happened in the district court?
No, I completely agree with you. NRS 126-1413 specifically requires a trial in contested paternity proceedings. There are a lot of types of cases that we can say, oh, they should have evidence taken, but there's a statute in this specific circumstance that very explicitly says once you have a recommendation from the judge, if there is any dispute over it, there must be a trial set. And that is something that she clearly didn't do. So aside from...
She dispatched you to us? I mean, essentially, is that a fair read of it? That the case, you presented your position, but then she simply said, I'm dismissing because we'd like a ruling from the Supreme Court?
That's my understanding.
Okay. So continue. I don't mean to sidetrack you. I'm sorry.
And I'm going to follow with an apology for sidetracking you, but I want to follow Justice Pickering's question. So this could have been resolved upon a proper hearing and evidence presented that would have been relatively short in order and presentation, correct?
I believe so. There's two. The big error is that she never had an evidentiary proceeding. Her commentary, the judge's commentary on her understanding of why she needed direction from the Supreme Court is likewise concerning. I think what really needs to be resolved in this case and what my understanding was that the district judge wanted resolved is how do you balance the presumption or the weight of an acknowledgement of paternity versus a very, very clear presumption of paternity based upon DNA test results.
It took evidence and hold a hearing. Sorry, that was an editorial comment, but please proceed.
But the fact of the matter is, on this record, the child was born out of wedlock, correct?
Yes.
So, I mean, we should have had a hearing that balanced these matters, and now we're being asked to balance them in the first instance, which is concerning, I think, to all of the members of this court. But the facts are these. Your client is apparently the biological father of this child. The child was not born during wedlock to someone who therefore would have had the presumption of being the father because he was born during the marriage. There should have been a private opportunity to resolve this and a trial to follow. And so I appreciate from your point of view you would like this resolved and your complaint should not have been dismissed, and I get those arguments. But from a case management perspective, it's troubling to me that the thought is, without having followed the statutes, it would be an advantage to just get sort of an advisory opinion from us before we go through the statutory process. What would you do? What do you want us to do here that accommodates the way the statute's written?
Number one, I absolutely think it needs to be remanded for a trial, but I think there needs to be some direction as to how the judge should weigh the acknowledgement of paternity and the paternity test results. I think that is why she didn't proceed. That's just my interpretation of the things that she said, but that we have two different sets of law that I don't think conflict. I think it's very clear that a presumption of paternity and an ability to challenge an acknowledgement of paternity should absolutely be heard and be given the weight that each one deserves, that an acknowledgement of paternity should not trump a DNA test. But having some direction as to how those two balance against each other, if they're competing presumptions that come in equally, if they are, if a challenge made properly to the acknowledgement of paternity for one of the grounds is heard separately or in conjunction with an establishment of paternity action.
So should we instruct the court as a matter of law that there is a conclusive presumption that your client is the father based upon this DNA test, or is it something that requires further evidence?
That obviously would be my preference, that there absolutely is a conclusive presumption established by the DNA test, and that the ability of an acknowledgement of paternity to rebut that is something that the acknowledgement of paternity, the person asserting the acknowledgement of paternity, has a burden once we have established the presumption based upon the DNA test.
But don't you think that, I mean, conclusive presumptions are addressed in Chapter 47 of the Nevada Revised Statutes as a matter of evidence. We have a statutory procedure. I don't dispute that your client presented sufficient proof to trigger this presumption. It would be advantageous to us to actually have had that process worked through in the district court so we could see what contest, if any, was made as to the effect of that conclusive presumption, the facts on which it was predicated and how they were handled in the district court. I think it's healthy for us to get a fully developed record where the district court actually followed the statute and processed it. And then we can look at it and say, oh, yeah, Chapter 47 works with Chapter 126, and on this record you had the predicate facts that triggered the presumption, et cetera, and I balanced these factors and these interests this way. That would be very helpful to me if I were trying to author an opinion on this that actually was thoughtful as opposed to pure statutory construction. So I guess that's more of a speech than a question. My strong inclination, and I'll address the same remarks to your opponent, is that you would reverse and remand and say, do this according to the statute. Right?
I understand that, and I think and that would be wonderful. I think that's what needs to happen. I think if there was more direction to the court as to how the various laws affect each other. We have a natural father who has fundamental rights and is a mom and some other man going to an administrative body and signing a form without the natural father's knowledge or consent sufficient to trump those fundamental rights. There's guidance that could be given to the district court.
How do we know that that's true, what you just said, that your client did not know anything about this?
Honestly, I don't think it's relevant whether or not he knew. He filed a paternity action within a short period of time. He certainly wasn't involved in the acknowledgement of paternity naming some other person, but regardless of the specific facts pertaining to that process, and there wasn't evidence taken, so we actually don't have any record on that issue. But unless he was a party to the acknowledgement of paternity or somehow involved in that process, which evidence would determine, there certainly needs to be a mechanism for a natural father to be able to maintain his parental rights without them being trampled on through somebody coming in with an acknowledgement of paternity that is set up under the law as a competing presumption. So another man should not be able to come in and say that he has equal rights to a natural father merely because he and the mother signed an acknowledgement through an administrative body. There should be a determination that a natural father has greater rights than someone who just signed a piece of paper. There should be mechanisms for him to be able to come to court and have the person who signed this acknowledgement incorrectly meet a burden instead of him having to meet a burden or even just be on equal standing with these people who
filed. And hence, you would process it under the conclusive presumption statutes and evidence code. I mean, that's how that would work, right?
Yes. Number one, I would say he's a natural father. He has fundamental rights that there's a presumption and it's conclusive evidence, and that in that statute of conclusive evidence of paternity, it does not list an acknowledgement of paternity as one of those conclusive presumptions. It is not a competing presumption, and the court needs to not be allowed to set up the acknowledgement of paternity on equal footing as far as the weight of the evidence that has to be presented on either side. I'd like to reserve my last minute for rebuttal.
Thank you very much, Mr. Fryer. on behalf of the respondent.
Good afternoon, Justices. Alex Hibato, on behalf of the respondent, Deliani Pernia. I want to start first by saying that there was a contention made by opposing counsel that Judge Pomerantz did not make a sufficient record or indicate why she was, what was going on at the hearing. But if you turn to page 4 of the May 28th transcript, lines 5 to 7, you'll see that she says, in fact, that there is, let me turn to it so that I can say for sure what it is that's been said. You'll see it says, there's already a legal father. Today we just answer a question. I'll tell you what, let's have a guardian ad litem. So she wants to set up the correct procedural posture. So Judge Pomerantz wanted for the complaint to be amended, add a guardian ad litem for the child, and add Chad
Davis. But she dismissed the complaint.
She dismissed the case because she said that there was already a legal father and there was no need for further proceedings.
Which then flies in the face of the statutory conclusive presumption, does it not?
Well, no, I think that if you read the parentage statute in whole, and I'll go through it right now as part of my argument, you'll see that the statute does provide for a mechanism wherein a legal father can be established.
Sure, but not in the face of a conclusive presumption otherwise showing, or what would show at the taking of evidence, in hearing otherwise known as taking evidence, where someone comes in and says, I'm the natural father and I have the scientific proof that says that I am at least relatively unequivocally the dad. Shouldn't that all be placed on the record?
I don't think that it's necessary given the statutory scheme.
Well, what about 126, 141.3? I mean, I'm not getting how this case even gets here. Well, I don't see how this court, in the district court, it did not follow 126, 141.3, which is it should have been set for trial.
Right. It stopped at the legal determination of parentage when, in fact, the statute 126, 141 clearly says something else is supposed to happen.
It does, but unless I think that if you read all of those, all of the statutes together, I think my position is that 141 is not necessary. And this is
why. So you don't think it's bad policy that this court would allow a legal acknowledgement of paternity to stand or to trump, as Ms. McFarland suggested, the natural, fundamental, natural rights of a father? What you're arguing is that we can look to a legal acknowledgement, whether it's before an administrative board or any other, even before a judge, and we should allow that to trump any conclusive presumption or any scientific showing that, in fact, someone else is the natural father.
Well, yeah, I do think that. And let me just go through this, the specific rules that I have outlined here and why I think that an order has already been issued as to who the legal father is. First, let me just say that the appellant in this case didn't file his complaint until 1 year later, or just under a year after the child was born. So it's not like he filed immediately after he had an idea that he may have been the father.
It's always better to answer our questions than going through your prepared statements, because our questions are obviously concerned about whether or not the statutory mandate, procedure, protocol, whatever you say, was followed in this case.
I think it was. The NRS 126.053 is a federal mandate. It's actually required by federal law, and I can tell you what the statute is. It's very long if you want me to
You answer the question. We don't think that this has been done properly below. We think it needs to go back to have a full evidentiary record prepared, and I'm being very candid.
I understand.
These are the concerns that we have.
Due process is a concern that this court would have, and there's also case law from from the United States Supreme Court that doesn't necessarily provide the appellant with the right to challenge this statutory scheme because he's been gone for so long. I can again recite some of those cases and some of the comments made by the justices in those cases. But let me just quickly go through this. In NRS 126.0314, says an expedited process has a meaning ascribed to it in NRS 126.161. Under 0.053, it says that the affidavit of paternity or the acknowledgement of paternity shall have the legal effect, or the same, the language is the a declaration of the voluntary acknowledgement of paternity signed by pursuant to section is not required to be ratified by a court. It has the same effect as a judgment or order of a court. So then you turn to NRS 126.161, and it states that a judgment or order of a court or a judgment or order entered pursuant to an expedited proceeding or process determining the existence or non-existence of a relationship of parent and child is determinative for all purposes. And if you then go down to the bottom, subsection 6, as used in this section, expedited process means a voluntary acknowledgement of paternity, which means that an order has already been entered, essentially stating, this is the father. There is already a father. It's done.
But there's a procedure in 053 to assert that the acknowledgement was the product of fraud, duress, or material mistake of fact.
That applies only to the person that signed the acknowledgement of paternity.
So you're saying that if somebody just wants to go in and a mother has a child out of wedlock and some guy goes in and says, here's my voluntary acknowledgement of paternity and nobody else knows about it, that stands against everything else and 141 has no application to anyone else in the procedure?
According to the statutory scheme, yes, I think that's the case. And I think because if you read it all together, you can read it, you can harmonize all statutes together. The way that I outlined is that in the first, in 0.051, you're talking about there being two men that are possibly the fathers of the child. And so then there's a test. One is determined to be the father. And then there's a presumption arises as a father through the DNA test. But that presumption can be overcome.
In a hearing.
No, and it says the presumption is rebutted by a court decree establishing paternity of the child by another man. That decree, that order is provided for in 0.053, where it says that the acknowledgement of paternity is an order of the court determined that says that he's a legal father.
But that is fait accompli to Justice Pickering's hypothetical, that once you get that gentleman in a room where he signs an order and the judge acknowledges it in some way, that game over, right?
That's essentially how I see it as a statutory scheme. That's how it is. And the federal mandate is written exactly, almost exactly to the letter as 126.053, except that instead of providing for this language that seems to have confused the appellant, it says that the acknowledgement of paternity, it has the same legal effect as an order of the court determining who is the father. And with all due respect, it seems it's illogical and kind of a, not illogical, but it seems to be a stretch that a mother of a child would run out and grab somebody, drag them into the hospital and say, sign this real quick and you're the father. That's not going to happen. That's not something that I don't think will ever happen.
But if it did, your view is that 60 days passes and game over, right?
Well, yeah, the 60 days are for the person that signed the acknowledgement of paternity. If those 60 days pass, the only way that he can set aside that acknowledgement of paternity is by asserting fraud, mistake of fact, or duress.
Right, but you would say that nobody else has any rights in that matter. Your argument is that if the mother finds some guy off the street and says, hey, sign this really quick, and the guy acquiesces in it, and he says, great, I've always wanted to be a dad, and so the mother and this person file this, and 60 days passes, and the person who signed it's perfectly happy, he's happy to be a dad, that that's the end of it, that there's no way to challenge that?
According to the way that the statutory scheme is written, I believe so. What usually happens is...
Conclusive presumption.
That's an extraordinary proposition to me. Yeah. It really is. I have to be candid.
It makes the rest of the statutes meaningless, but...
Well, I think the statute providing for an evidentiary hearing is one in which there is no affidavit or acknowledgement of paternity. Nobody knows who the father is. It's all over the place. And it even says in the first section of that statute that even the child can bring the complaint. Or a father or multiple people, anybody can come forward and make a claim for this child. And that's why I think that you can harmonize all of these statutes, because it's kind of like levels of due process, essentially.
I may not be understanding your argument then, because I thought I just heard you say once the voluntary acknowledgement of paternity is in place, game over. So now you're telling us that there is a process by which individuals can come into the court and challenge that.
Only where there's an acknowledgement of paternity.
Oh, so it is correct then, what you told Justice Pickering, is that once there is the voluntary acknowledgement...
It's done, right. If there's no acknowledgement of paternity, if there's no DNA test, if there's no indication of who the father of the child may be, but there's a lot of fathers out there that may be the case, and this is what it is today in the modern world, you know, there may be a woman that has been with several men within the time of conception, and... those men want to know whether they're a father or not, then I think that's when the evidentiary hearing comes in and the complaint for paternity makes sense at that point.
Or one of them could just sign the voluntary acknowledgement.
That's right. One of them can just say, I think I'm the father, and sign the acknowledgement of paternity. Unfortunately, that is the law. We can't change the law, especially the acknowledgement of paternity, because that's a federal mandate. That's written in a federal court, so we can't challenge that here. That's the supremacy clause. And the rule is what the rule is. Unfortunately, that is the scheme. And I don't see any way that this court can change that. So that legislature perhaps can, but the statutory scheme just provides for...
Well, in fact, the legislature did look at this whole conclusive presumption subsequent to the cases that you cite where they added this to our statutory scheme, correct?
I didn't cite any cases. What I'm saying is that there was a federal mandate. There was a statute that was promulgated by Congress, and the purpose of that statute was to...
You cited Love versus Love, a 1998 case, unless I'm reading this incorrectly.
In the answering brief, you mean, Justice, correct?
Could be. Okay. For the proposition that NRS 126.051 does not set forth conclusive presumptions of paternity, and Nevada's statutory scheme clearly reflects the legislature's intent to allow non-biological factors to become critical in paternity determination.
Right, and that's in that statute, but when we come to the
right,
next one...
Right, and you are, of course, aware that the Nevada legislature amended that statute.
I am, yes. But what we're talking about here is the fact that this man filed an affidavit of paternity, and the reason he did that is he was residing with the mother 6 months before. He was a fiancé of the mother 6 months before the child was born.
Well, how do we know all that when we didn't have a trial? I mean, where's the evidence of that?
Well, it's in the pleadings. I don't know that it matters. The record's pretty sparse, obviously. I think it indicates that the father came forward a year later in order to file his complaint for paternity, but by that time, an acknowledgement of paternity had already been signed. And there's case law that from the United States Supreme Court that says essentially, you kind of over time start losing your due process rights to
not within a year. There's no law that you can cite, no case that you can cite to me that says a year.
No. It doesn't give. There's no set time limit. But essentially, what's said is, the longer that goes on and the more that this family becomes bonded and there's this familiar relationship between the three, the mother, the father, and the child, that the presumed father, the putative father, the actual father, kind of loses his ability, his due process rights to challenge that. And I have 18 seconds, but I'll say real quick that... that if the court should say at this point, should say that this needs to go back to an evidentiary hearing, what the court's doing is now reaching into a family unit. And if I can just have a couple more seconds so I can explain that.
Complete your thoughts, certainly.
Yeah, so what the court's asking, what appellant is asking to do now, because they are married and they are a family unit, and it's been that way now for 2 years, the child's going on 3 years old. Child was about 8 months old when the appellant filed his complaint for divorce. At this point, you would have to dig into the family relationship, the familial relationship, which there is a plethora of case law that says that that is something that is constitutionally protected to a high degree. So it's just something that would open a can of worms, I think, that this court doesn't want to engage in. And even if it was remanded back down to Judge Pomerantz, I think it would be difficult for Judge Pomerantz to find anything else. But that, she can do nothing because at this point, there's a family involved. You'd have to unravel that family relationship, rip the child away from that family, and give the child Ian back to Mr. Franceschi.
Not necessarily. Is the record, am I reading the record correctly when I note that the mom in this case has allowed Mr. Franceschi to visit the child?
I believe, if I recall, and I'm sorry to cut you off, Judge, or Justice, but as I recall the record, there was some indication that because they had an affair, I think a month prior to conception or prior to the time she found out she was pregnant, but she was still with her fiance. So there was some
simple
doubt.
Question. There, you don't deny that there was visitation provided.
There was some doubt, but that visitation was very sporadic. It was very minimal. And at some point, Mr. Franceschi decided to do a DNA test of his own accord to determine whether or not this child was his. At that time is when he filed his complaint for paternity. But, he had an affair with her. He knew that she was with somebody else. He could have brought that a lot sooner. He could have done his complaint for paternity a lot sooner to determine whether he is the father. And then his due process rights would have been protected because at that time they were not married. And so at this point, they're married. The child resides with them, for 2 years. To be able to now say that he has a right for an evidentiary hearing to determine if he is, I mean, we all know he's the father. The facts are undisputed. I just think that based on NRS 126.053, and it coupled with NRS 126.161, there is an order by statute that she that.
And I'm going to have you make this your last sentence. We've now gone 3 minutes over your time.
I'm sorry, Justice, but there is an order that he is the legal father, and that order has to be set aside in the regular manner that orders would be set aside.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And because we have given the respondent a significant amount of additional time, Ms. McFarland, I'm going to add 2 minutes to your rebuttal time as well.
Thank you. Respondent states that there's a federal mandate, but that federal mandate allows a challenge. The statutes regarding an acknowledgement of paternity specifically allow challenge. And that challenge, there's a revocation period that obviously extends to the people who are parties to the acknowledgement. A challenge must be allowed to extend to an actual natural father. And there shouldn't be a limitation on who can challenge that. Obviously, anybody with an interest in that acknowledgement should be able to challenge it. But absolutely, a natural father should be able to. The statute provides that a presumption created by DNA evidence can be overcome. But it's a burden shift. That presumption can be overcome by a decree of paternity or an establishment of paternity through an acknowledgement. but there's a burden on the person who did the acknowledgement of paternity. There are situations where that burden could be met. I mean, if somebody waits 17 years to file a paternity action when there's been an acknowledgement in place and a nuclear family, that could meet a burden. But that's something that has to be on evidence that's taken, and it's something that is, the burden is on the person who did the acknowledgement of paternity that did not name the correct father. So there has to be a clear presumption based on DNA and a burden shift to the person who has established paternity through the acknowledgement. The defenses such as a parent being gone so long that was noted, it's not a due process, right? It doesn't stop a parent, a natural father's due process right from coming to court if he waited too long. It's certainly something that the court should consider and take into account when taking evidence, but there should not be any bar that says, hey, you waited 8 months or 17 years, you can't come to court. That person who waits 17 years absolutely should have the right to come to court and challenge the acknowledgement of paternity. They might not win, but that's for the judge to decide, and the judge has an enormous amount of discretion in deciding those types of matters. And the judge obviously needs some direction as to how to weigh those burdens and where the burdens start. You have a presumption of DNA. You start there. The burden shifts. The person who has the acknowledgement of paternity now has the burden. That burden may or may not be overcome based upon the evidence, but it needs to be clearly established, the burden and the shifting of the burden, and how those two things correlate when a judge is making a determination. That's a legal issue that the judge needs to decide, needs to know where the burden is in order to properly weigh the evidence and make findings. Another thing that came up, one more sentence, I'm sorry. There was an argument that it has now been so long that this child is now settled with the father on the acknowledgement of paternity. I would ask for this to be remanded and for direction for the judge not to take into account the time since my client filed his petition for paternity against him as any kind of settled fact. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. McFarland. Thank you both for your arguments here today. This matter will stand submitted.